ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text number 2. Rajavidya, Rajabhuyam, Pavitram, Idam, Uttamam, on page 449 of this book. For those who have books. For those who don't, if you'd like them, I think you'd want. No? There's another one right here. Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartum Avyayam Rajavidya Rajabhuyam Pavitram Idamuttamam Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharmyam Susukam kartamavyayam Rajavidya Rajaguyam Pavitram idamuttamam Pratyakshavagamam damyam Susukam kartamavyayam Rajavidya Rajaguyam Pavitram idamuttamam Pratyakshavagamam damyam Susukam kartamavyayam Somebody like to chant it?
Rajavidya Rajaguyam Rajavidya Rajaguhyam
Rajavidya Rajaguhyam
Pavitram Idam Uttamam
Prayasagamyam Dharmyam
Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam
Susukam Kartamavyayam
Rajavidya Rajaguhyam
Pavitram Idam Uttamam
Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam
Susukam Kartamavyayam
Rajavidya The king of education
Rajaguyam
The king of confidential knowledge.
The king of confidential knowledge.
Pavitram.
Pavitram.
The purest.
The purest.
Idam.
Idam.
This.
This.
Uttamam.
Uttamam.
Transcendental.
Transcendental.
Pratyaksha.
Pratyaksha.
By direct experience.
By direct experience.
Avagamam.
Avagamam.
Understood.
Understood.
Dharmyam.
Dharmyam.
The principle of religion.
The principle of religion.
Susukam.
Susukam.
Very happy.
Very happy.
Kartum.
Kartum.
To execute.
To execute.
Avyayam.
Avyayam.
Everlasting.
Everlasting.
This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. Repeat. This knowledge is the king of education.
This knowledge is the king of education.
The most secret of all secrets.
The most secret of all secrets.
It is the purest knowledge.
It is the purest knowledge.
And because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion.
And because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion.
It is everlasting.
It is everlasting.
And it is joyfully performed.
And it is joyfully performed.
Report. This chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called the King of Education because it is the essence of all doctrines and philosophies explained before. Among the principal philosophers in India are Gautama, Pranada, Kapila, Yogyavalkya, Sandilya, and Vaishvana. And finally, there is Vyasadeva, the author of the Vedanta Sutra. So there is no dearth of knowledge in the field of philosophy or transcendental knowledge. Now the Lord says that this ninth chapter is the king of all such knowledge. The essence of all knowledge that can be derived from the study of the Vedas and different kinds of philosophy. It is the most confidential because confidential or transcendental knowledge involves understanding the difference between the soul and the body. And the king of all confidential knowledge culminates in devotional service. Generally, people are not educated in this confidential knowledge. They are educated in external knowledge. As far as ordinary education is concerned, people are involved with so many departments: politics, sociology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, astronomy, engineering, etc. There are so many departments of knowledge all over the world and many huge universities. But there is unfortunately
just a few. If you want to wait a couple of minutes.
Okay.
I think it's ready. I don't know if you're putting it off. If you still have it.
There are so many departments of knowledge all over the world and in huge universities, but there is unfortunately no university or educational institution where the science of the spirit soul is instructed. If the soul is the most important part of the body, without the presence of the soul, the body has no value. Still, people are placing great stress on the bodily necessities of life, not caring for the vital soul. Bhagavad Gita, especially from the second chapter on, stresses the importance of the soul. In the very beginning, the Lord says that this body is perishable, that the soul is not perishable. Antavanta ive deha nitya syokta sharirana. That is a confidential part of knowledge.
What might we have? Blow me right off the chair.
Face it the other way. Okay.
I guess I asked for it, didn't I?
Is that okay?
Well, huh? Blasting, right?
And I'm really sweating. Confidential part of knowledge. Simply knowing that the spirit soul is different from this body and that its nature is immutable, indestructible, and eternal. But that gives no positive information about the soul. Sometimes people are under the impression that the soul is different from the body and that when the body is finished or one is liberated from the body, the soul remains in a void and becomes impersonal. But actually, that is not the fact. How can the soul, which is so active within this body, be inactive after being liberated from the body? It is always active. If it is eternal, then it is eternally active. And its activities in the spiritual kingdom are the most confidential part of spiritual knowledge. These activities of the spirit soul are therefore indicated here as constituting the king of all knowledge, the most confidential part of all knowledge. This knowledge is the purest form of all activities, as explained in the Vedic literature. In the Padma Purana, man's sinful activities have been analyzed and are shown to be the results of sin after sin. Those who are engaged in fruitive activities are entangled in different stages and forms of sinful reactions. For instance, when the seed of a particular tree is sown, the tree does not appear immediately to grow. It takes some time. It is first a small sprouting plant, then it assumes the form of a tree, then it flowers and bears fruit, and when it is complete, the flowers and fruits are enjoyed by persons who have sown the seed of the tree. Similarly, a man performs a sinful act, and like a seed, it takes time to fructify. There are different stages. The sinful action may have already stopped within the individual, but the results of the fruit of that sinful action are still to be enjoyed. There are sins which are still in the form of a seed, and there are others which are already fructified and are giving us fruit, which we are enjoying as distress and pain. As explained in the 28th verse of the 7th chapter, a person who has completely ended the reactions of all sinful activities and who is fully engaged in pious activities, being freed from the duality of this material world, becomes engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. In other words, those who are actually engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord are already freed from all reactions. This statement is confirmed in the Padma Purana, Aparabdha palam papam kutam bijam palam mukam kraminayava paliyate vishnu bhakti vrtatmanam. For those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all sinful reactions, whether fructified, in the stalk, or in the form of a seed, gradually vanish. Therefore, the purifying potency of devotional service is very strong, and it is called Pavitram Uttama. Uttama means transcendental. Tamas means this material world or darkness. And uttama means that which is transcendental to material activities. Devotional activities are never to be considered material, although sometimes it appears that devotees are engaged like ordinary men. One who can see and is familiar with devotional service will know that they are not material activities. They are all spiritual and devotional, uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. This is a long commentary. I'll stop here for now and speak a little bit about what we've read so far, and then we can gradually continue the commentary. Om Jnana Kimaran Vasya Jnana Jnana Sarapya Chakshu Unnitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Maha Ukam Karoti Vachalam Vangum Nangayate Vinit Yad Kripa Tamaham Mangayi Shri Gurudeva Maha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namini Namaste Sadaswati Devi Gaudavani Pachandi Nivashesha Kundalini Pasitachitamisipandi Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakti Vinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitram Itam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Ramyam Susukam Kartam Avyayam. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and is directly performed. This is verse 2 of chapter 9. In the first verse, Krishna says, Idam tu te bhuya tamam bhava shama na suya ve jnana vijnana sahitam yajgatva moksha se shubha. He describes what this knowledge is. He says, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. He's describing it as confidential knowledge, guhyatamam, the most confidential. And in this verse that we read today, the second verse, this knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. And it is the purest knowledge. So Prabhupada explains in his commentary that the type of knowledge that Krishna is speaking about in the Bhagavad Gita is not mere academic knowledge. He gives the example that in the universities, there are many departments of knowledge all over the world, and these knowledges in these universities are teaching politics, sociology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, and so forth. But there's unfortunately no university educational institution where the science of the spirit soul is instructed. Prabhupada one time, when he was in Boston, he was giving a lecture at MIT. And he asked the assembled professors and students who were gathered for his lecture, can you please tell me where in this university are they teaching the difference between a dead man and a living man? He checked. Nobody could give an answer. And Prabhupada went on to explain that real knowledge means to know what is matter and what is spirit and who is the controller of both. Simply to study mathematics, science, engineering, and the science of matter is incomplete knowledge. It is knowledge of the temporary nature of this material world. But he goes on to explain that the science of the soul cannot be simply studied academically in the university. And he gave the example that just like when one is studying science, then one has to go to the laboratory and perform an experiment if one wants to get a particular result, which is stated that one can obtain by performing that scientific experiment. So he says also for spiritual knowledge, in order to obtain the result of vijnana, there's theoretical knowledge and there's vijnana or realized knowledge. As explained in the previous verse, the word that he used was jnanam vijnana sahitam. Jnana is theoretical knowledge, vijnana is realized knowledge. So if one wants to realize the message or the spiritual knowledge of Bhagavad Gita or this guhyatamam, this most confidential knowledge, the same way just as one goes to the laboratory and performs an experiment, he mixes two various chemicals and he may get a particular result, two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen, he gets water. In the same way, if one wants to realize the self or understand the self as distinct from the physical, temporary physical body, then it is required that one has to perform certain activities which are conducive for understanding the existence of the soul. Simply It is not, as Prabhupada many times would challenge, that life does not come from a combination of chemicals, but the origin of life is life itself. And the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, is the original living being. Krishna is the original living being, and he is maintaining and supporting all other living beings. As who describes in the Shastra is his superior energy, the spiritual energy. Vishnu Shakti Para Prabhupada Kshetra Gyakya Tata Para Avijikarma Samgyanatatiya Shakti Shite. The potencies of the Supreme Lord are summarized in three categories, that they are the spiritual potency, which is full of knowledge. You are the living entity, the jiva, who belongs to the spiritual potency, but he can come under the influence of the Lord's third potency, which is matter, which is material energy, and is visible in fruitive activities. But these are the three primary potencies of the Supreme Lord. And the living entity, who is eternal and spiritual by nature, as Krishna explains in the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Jayate Mriyate Vahapitachin, he says, for the soul there's never birth nor death, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. He's unborn, undying, eternal, primeval, never existing. He is not slain when the body is slain. Krishna begins his instruction to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, right from the very beginning in the second chapter. He tells Arjuna, you are lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief. Those who are not wise will lament neither for the living nor for the dead. And he goes on to explain about the existence of the soul. And Prabhupada speaks about this here in his commentary. He says that Bhagavad Gita, especially from the second chapter on, stresses the importance of the soul. In the very beginning, the Lord says that this body is perishable and that the soul is not perishable. That is a confidential part of knowledge. Simply knowing that the spirit soul is different from this body and that its nature is immutable, indestructible, and eternal. But that gives no positive information about the soul. Sometimes people are under the impression that the soul is different from the body and that when the body is finished or one is liberated from the body, the soul remains in a void and becomes impersonal. Prabhupada goes on to explain what is the actual identity of the soul. We understand that the soul is not this body, it is eternal, whereas the body is temporary. Krishna gives the example as a person puts on new garments, giving up the old and useless ones. Similarly, the living entity accepts a new body, giving up the old and useless bodies. He gives the example just as a person taking off his old and useless clothes and sheds them when they're no longer useful. In the same way, when the living entity, his body is growing old and just becomes diseased and can no longer provide a suitable residence for the eternal soul, then the living entity departs from that body. And according to the activities performed in that life, the human being has to accept, the living entity in the human body has to accept another body according to the mentality he has at the time of giving up his body. Krishna elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita explains that just as the air carries different aromas from one place to the next, similarly the soul carries its different conceptions of life from one body to the next. Whatever desires that one cultivates in the human form of life, then that desire will carry him along with the assistance of the super soul, who there's the existence of the soul within the body, who is the knower of the field of activities with that body. Then it's described there is the supernova, or the super soul, who is the Supreme Lord, who is manifest in the heart of every living being. And he is the knower of all fields. Prabhupada gives the example, just like a person may have a plot of land, and he's quite aware of everything that goes on in his plot of land, the garden that grows, the house that he builds. So he is the knower of his own field of activities. But the king, in the kingdom, he is aware of what is going on in all the different plots of land. And therefore he has his various ministers and persons who go from one plot to the next, exacting taxes upon the citizens and explaining to the king what is existing on each of the plots of land. So he gives that example to illustrate how The living entity is the knower of the field of activities. He is Kshetriya, the knower of his own field of activities. But the Lord is the super soul, is the super knower. And he is knowing, he knows what is going on in all the different bodies, because he is present in the heart of every living being. The example is given that just as the sun is situated in one place in the sky, but it may be reflected in so many pots of water on the land. So if you look at each pot, you will see a reflection of the sun. So in the same way, the Supreme Lord is situated, ekadesha sitasya near Joshya Vistara Nigata. Just as the sun is situated in one place in the universe, but it spreads through its energies throughout the entire universe, the forms of the sun rays. So in the same way, the Supreme Lord, he is situated in one place in the spiritual world, but he pervades it. Mayatitami dharam saravam jagadav yakti mortina, as he explains in Bhagavad Gita. By me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. So he explains how he pervades this entire creation by his impersonal aspect, Mayatitami jagadav yakti mortina. Or as explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedanti Tatvid Vedas, Tatvid Yaj Gyanam Advayam, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti Shabhyate. But learn the transcendentalists who know this absolute truth. They call this non dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So the Lord pervades this entire creation in his impersonal aspect by his diverse energies. He also pervades this universe, this cosmic manifestation as the Paramatma manifestation, who is the super soul within the heart of every living being. And as the super soul, he is the witness of the living entity's desires, and he is the permitter. He gives sanction. And therefore he is situated as the super soul. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan. And the third realization, or the topmost realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is this aspect of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shyamasundar, who is manifested in his three, eternally in his threefold bending form, as Krishna, who plays a flute, and who enjoys an eternal realm of the Loka Vrindavan, as an eternally fresh youth, cowherd boy, who enjoys with his eternal associates, his parents, his friends, and his lovers, in this transcendental realm of Goloka Vrindavan. So depending upon the method of worship by the worshippers, then they achieve a particular destination. For those who worship the all-pervasive impersonal absolute, then they achieve, at the time of giving up this body, the entrance into the Brahman effulgence. And those who worship the Supreme Lord as the super soul, they ultimately can achieve the same destination, although they may enter into the transcendental realm of Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. But those who worship Krishna in his personal form, as Krishna Bhagavan, the Shyamasundar, the threefold bending form of Krishna, they enter into the transcendental realm of Goloka Vrindavan. As Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, Yega tamam prapajante tam sadaiva bhajamyaham. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Krishna. So Krishna is explaining the destination of those souls who worship him in these three aspects, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. But what is the destination of those souls who do not worship the Supreme Lord? And this is explained here very elaborately by Srila Prabhupada in this commentary. He describes that this knowledge is the purest form of all activities explained in the Vedic literature. In the Padma Purana, man's sinful activities have been analyzed and are shown to be the results of sin after sin. Those who are engaged in fruitive activities are entangled in different stages and forms of sinful reactions. He gives the example. When the seed of a particular tree is sown, the tree does not appear immediately to grow, it takes some time. It is first a small sprouting plant, then it assumes the form of a tree, then it flowers and bears fruit, and when it is complete, the flowers and fruits are enjoyed by persons who have sown the seed of the tree. Similarly, a man performs a sinful act. Like a seed, it takes time to fructify. There are different stages. The sinful action may have already stopped, within the individual, but the results or the fruit of that sinful action are still to be enjoyed. There are sins which are still in the form of a seed, and there are others which are already fructified and are giving us fruit, which we are enjoying as distress and pain. So here Srila Prabhupada describes what is the destination of those persons who do not worship the Lord in any one of His three aspects, Brahman, Paramatman, and Bhagavan, who are simply engaged in sinful activities. And Prabhupada explains that, or actually it's explained in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, elsewhere also in the Padma Purana, it is described that suffering or distress has three different causes. One is called papam, another is called bijam, and another is called avidya. Papam means sinful activities. Bijam means a sinful desire within the heart. And avidya means ignorance. The root cause of all suffering is described as ignorance. Due to ignorance, the person tries to enjoy, he doesn't understand his eternal identity. And thinking himself to be the temporary physical body, he tries to enjoy separate from understanding his eternal relationship with the Lord due to ignorance. And therefore he engages in some form of sinful activity, which is called papam. Papam has two results. One is called prarabdha, and the other is called aprarabdha. Prarabdha karma means results that have already fructified. The person, if he's suffering in this life, as Prabhupada explains in the Nectar of Devotion, he may have a diseased body, or he may be experiencing some legal implication, or he may take a very low birth in this life, or he may be born in a very suffering condition. These are what is called prarabdha karma. They're the results of some previous sinful activities performed in a previous life, which are prarabdha, which are already manifest. And aprarabdha karma as Srila Prabhupada is describing here in this commentary. He gives the example just like a seed is sown in the ground. When the seed is grown, it first is a small plant, and it assumes the form of a tree, and it flowers and bears fruit. When it is complete, the flowers and fruits are enjoyed by persons who sown the seed of the tree. So aprarabdha karma means those sinful reactions which are still lying dormant, waiting to fructify. They've not manifested yet, but they will manifest. In the Srimad Bhagavatam there is one verse, Kechit Kevalaya Bhakti Vasudeva Parayana Agamdun Bharti Karsaya Niharam Iva Bhaskara. Only a rare person who has achieved unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord Vasudeva can uproot the weeds of sinful desires without any possibility of them reviving again. He can do this by discharging devotional service just as the sun dissipates the fog by its rays. Bhagavatam gives the example of the sun. Just like there may be fog, and when the sun rises in the morning, the fog is still manifest for some time. But as the sun increases more and more, rises in the sky, then gradually it burns up the fog, and the fog is dissipated. I just recently experienced this. I was flying out of Delhi. And if you know that during the winter time, it's very foggy in Delhi. And usually most flights in the morning don't get out, and most flights landing in Delhi don't get in. Many times I've flown to Delhi on an early morning arrival flight and have gone to Bangkok, gone to Calcutta, but you can't land. You have to wait until the sun comes up, and gradually, as the sun begins, gradually burns the fog off, and then the flight, it's happened to me twice before. Actually, I was flying into Calcutta, the same thing. Flying into Calcutta, my flight was diverted to Bangkok, and I had to sit in Bangkok airport for about 5 hours, waiting for the fog to lift, or to be burnt up, and then the flight took off from Bangkok and flew back to Calcutta. So the example Bhagavatam gives is that a person who engages in devotional service to the Lord, he can uproot the weeds of sinful desires just as the sun dissipates the fog by its rays. just as the sun gradually burns the fog by the rays, in the same way devotional service gradually burns the seeds of sinful desires within the heart. What is the source of suffering? Sinful activities. But what is the source of sinful activities? It is described as bijam, sinful desires within the heart. And how do these sinful desires manifest in the heart? It's one form of aparabdha karma. Just like when one engages in sinful activity, then what happens in his next life, then he has a proclivity. The example is given. It's like a person engages in some sinful activity in this life, and his next life, he has a proclivity for thievery. There's a natural proclivity to engage in thievery. So that is called kupta. It's an inclination towards stealing. But then, what happens is bijam. Bijam is when the seed of the desire to commit the theft is there. I start to think, I was just looking today on the news. Two robbers went into a store, and they attacked one woman, and they injured her. They stole everything from the store, and they stole as many cigarettes as they can get. And then the police were looking for these two robbers, and who were wearing, I can't remember what it was, something ridiculous on their faces. Some mat. Where's a mat? Oh, they were wearing a woman's thong. That's what it was. And that's why they were looking for them. They were wearing a woman's thong in their face, trying to cover their face. And it wasn't really sufficient for covering their face. So they were putting their faces on the television. Does anybody recognize these people? They used a foolish mask to cover themselves, and most of their faces exposed. If one thing is for sure, we're going to catch these people and punish them and apprehend them. So the point is that there's a proclivity for thievery, and then although there may be a proclivity for thievery, then when the desire is there to commit some theft, then what happens? One commits the theft, and then apprehension is there, punishment is there. So this is explained here as kupta, bijam. Bijam is the sinful desire. And then what is next is suffering. One gets the reaction, punishment, or legal implication. Or in the case of some sinful activity, he has to accept some suffering in this life. But there are two forms of suffering. One is when some implication comes in the form of suffering, and the other is when the desire to commit the activity again manifests again. So it is sort of like a vicious circle. One commits a sinful activity, and it creates a sinful desire within the heart to commit the sin again. So therefore it is described in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, real atonement doesn't simply mean to neutralize the effects of sinful reactions. One may try to neutralize the effects of sinful reactions by engaging in some form of pious activity, like, for instance, through performance of austerities, through the performance of charity, by accepting vows. But these pious activities will not uproot the desires from within the heart to perform sinful activities again. Although they may neutralize the reaction by performance of pious activities. And the example is given, just like an elephant may enter into the water and take its bath in the river. But when it comes out of the river, what does it do? It rolls in the mud. So what is the value of such bathing? In the same way, what is the value of such atonement when one tries to neutralize the reactions so he doesn't suffer the results of his sinful activities, when the desire for sinful activity is still there within the heart? Example is given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, just like a person may suffer due to unrestricted sex life, he may engage in sexual activity, he may contract some venereal disease, he has to undergo some atonement, some suffering, to become relieved from his disease. But if the desire to engage in unrestricted sex is still there within the heart, what is the value of such atonement? He will commit the activity again, and will still have to suffer. Therefore, the Bhagavatam states that real freedom from sinful activities, from the reactions to sinful activities, means to uproot the weeds of sinful desires within the heart. Kinchit kivaliya bhaktya. And the example that is given is just like the fog is burned by the rays of the sun. In the same way, the example is given, just like the seed. A seed, if it is taken, just like you may have weeds in the garden, anyone who knows is weeding the garden. If you go through the garden, you turn over the soil, and you turn all the weeds underneath, the soil for some time will look very clean, free from weeds. You may think, I'm finished, I've gotten rid of all the weeds, just look at the soil. But in due course of time, those seeds which are under the soil, they'll gradually grow again. But a fried seed will not fructify. A burnt seed cannot fructify. So in the same way, the seeds of sinful desires within the heart are burnt up in the fire of Krishna consciousness. How are they burnt up? Kichit kivaliya bhakti vasudeva parayana. A person who engages in devotional service, he uproots the weeds of sinful desires without any possibility of them ever reviving. He does this by engaging in devotional service. Because what is the nature of devotional service? Devotional service is that activity which is very pleasing and satisfying to the Lord. When one engages in devotional service which pleases the Lord, what is that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Krishna says, a bodied soul may restrict themselves from sense enjoyment, though for the taste for sense objects, vishaya vinivartade naharasya vehinam rasavajam visopyasva param jishvar nivartate. The embodied soul that may restrict himself from sense enjoyment, while the taste for sense enjoyment still remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he becomes fixed in consciousness. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, a person may restrict himself from sense enjoyment. He may restrict himself from the propensity from engaging in sinful activities, but until that seed of sinful desire has been burnt up within the heart, the propensity or the tendency to commit sin again and again still remains within the heart. Devotional service eradicates the propensity or the inclination to commit sinful activity by giving the living entity a superior form of pleasure. Prabhupada would oftentimes give the example that just like a young child may be very much attracted playing with knives, and playing with knives for a young child is a very dangerous affair. But the child wants to play with a knife. And if the parent tries to take the knife away from the child will resist and it becomes more dangerous. As soon as the child resists, then the child will grab the knife and try and attempt to keep it. He likes to play with it. So he says, what does the parent do in such a case? If the parent will offer the child a nice colorful toy, then the child becoming attracted to the toy, in order to take the toy, has to drop the knife. So Prabhupada gives this example in the same way. When a person who is attracted or has a bija, that sinful inclination to engage in sinful activity, when he experiences a higher pleasure in Krishna consciousness, then he loses. He gives up his inclination to engage in those activities which are the root cause of his suffering, as we said, which is our avidya. So the three causes of suffering are papa, sinful activities, bija, which is the seed of sinful desires, which is a result of previous sinful activities in the form of aparabdha karma, which is still there within the heart. That desire to commit some sin is still there within the heart. And then the third is called avidya, ignorance. Devotional service is described to be so, as it's described here, devotional service is pavitam uttama. It's the purest. Uttama means transcendental, tamas means this material world or darkness. And uttama means that which is transcendental to material activities. Devotional activities are never to be considered material, although sometimes it appears that devotees are engaged just like ordinary men. They are all spiritual and devotional, uncontaminated by the material modes of nature. So, therefore, the verse in the Padma Purana, aparabdha palam papam uttam bijam palam mukam kramanayava padiyeta vishnu bhakti vatatmanam. For those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all sinful reactions, whether fructified in the stalk or in the form of a seed, gradually vanish. Therefore, the purifying potency of devotional service is very strong, and it is called Pavitam Uttama, the purest. So therefore, in this verse, Krishna is saying Pavitam Uttama. It is the purest knowledge, this knowledge of devotional service. It is very interesting. I was doing some research today and on this particular subject of sinful activities. And in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he actually gives a very elaborate description of what sinful activities are. We may not be fully conversant in the science of sinful activities, but Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a very elaborate description, but to help us understand what are the causes of suffering. But we, as we have explained in this verse from Bhagavad Gita, that the proclivity or the inclination towards engaging in sinful activity that is there within the heart and which is the cause of suffering, simply to try to restrain from these activities is not sufficient in of itself. Although we may know what sinful activities are, still sometimes we see, just as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, by contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops lust, anger, delusion, attachment, bewilderment of memory, intelligence is lost, and when one loses intelligence, he falls in the material whirlpool, engages in sinful activities. It all begins by contemplation of the objects of the senses. And he describes what is the downfall of living entity. By contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops lust, just wants to try to satisfy himself. And then when his lust is unfulfilled, it's called Viroda Yukta Krodha, he becomes angry. Because his lustful propensities are somehow thwarted or obstructed, either by apparently by somebody else's desire to thwart our attempts to satisfy ourselves, or by material nature, or by karma, whatever it may be. And we become angry, called Viroda Yukta Krodha, anger which arises from attachment. But anger becomes bewilderment. It's like sometimes we become very angry at somebody, we may say something that we later regret. And because this anger becomes so consuming, it consumes our mind, it consumes our senses, and we lose control, we become bewildered. Why did I do such a thing? I lost control of myself due to anger. And this is described as another form of sin in this list Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes. But as we said, simply knowing the sin in of itself, it's not necessarily going to save us. To understand what these sinful activities are helping, to understand these sinful activities helps us to understand the power of devotional service. And if we can understand the power of devotional service, we can appreciate the necessity to engage in devotional service. Just like we quoted one verse, I think it was from the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tais tanya gani puyante tapo dana bratadibi na dharma jam tad dhidhadyam tad apisangli sevaya. Although one may neutralize the reactions of sinful life through austerity, charity, vows, and other such methods, these pious activities cannot uproot the material desires in one's heart. However, if one serves the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead, he is immediately freed from all such contaminations. This is 6th canto, 2nd chapter, 17th verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's in the story of Ajamila. The story of the 6th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Many of you may have heard of this story about Ajamila, who had taken his birth and as a Brahmin in a Brahmin family. He was engaged in many Brahminical activities, but this sinful Ajamila, this Ajamila, who was Brahminical, while walking along the path one day, he saw this Sudra and Sudrani embracing one another, engaged in a relationship. And just simply by seeing this, his mind became overwhelmed by lustful desires. And later he came back and searched out this prostitute and married her. And when he married her, in order to support him and his 10 children that he had with her, he fathered children that's described all the way up to the age in his 80s, and engaged in all kinds of sinful activities in order to maintain his family, through thievery, through taking intoxications, plundering, and murder. So he was engaged in all kinds of sinful activities. And then it just so happened that Ajamil, his youngest son, was named, he called him Narayan. And at the time when it was time for him to give up his body, and he saw these four fearful Yamadutas coming with their ropes to take him and to snatch him out of the body, to take him and to give him his punishment, his due punishment for his life of sinful activities, he was thinking of his son Narayan, and he called out the names of Narayana in a helpless state. By simply calling out the name of Narayana in this helpless state of mind, he, by chanting the names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it counteracted the reactions of his sinful life. And then although the Yamadutas had come to arrest him with the ropes of Yamaraj and to take him to the hellish planets for punishment, this story was described by Shukadeva Goswami in the Srimad Bhagavatam just after the 5th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where there was a description of the hellish planets. And in the description of the hellish planets, it's described all the different destinations the living entities have to go and the torments and punishments they have to experience for all various types of sinful activities. When Parikshit Maharaj heard this description, he became overwhelmed, and he was thinking, how can living entities avoid having to be punished and suffer in this way? And his spiritual master, Shukadeva Goswami, described to him the story of Ajamil. And in the story of Ajamil, it described that how Ajamil, at the time when it was destined for him to give up his body, the Yamadutas had come to arrest him and to pull him out of his body, to take him to punishment to the hellish planets. But the Vishnudutas appeared, who were the representatives of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and they stopped him. And he said, "Stop. This person has counteracted his sinful activities by calling out the name of Narayan at the time of giving up his body." And then a conversation between them ensued, a discussion between the Vishnudutas and the Yamadutas. And the whole time, Ajamil was lying there and he was hearing this discussion between the Vishnudutas and the Yamadutas. And they were describing the principles of religion and speaking about the power of the holy name of the Lord. And by hearing the Vishnudutas defeat the Yamadutas, his heart became completely purified from all the residual attachments and lust. Not only did he become purified from sinful reactions, but then he was allowed to stay in the body, and he immediately went to one sacred place, I can't remember where it was, and engaged in devotional service to the end of his life. And then at the end of his life, when it was time for him to give up his body again, and this also the story describes how one's karmic reactions can be burnt up by devotional service. Although he was destined to give up his body according to his karma at that particular time, still he did not give up his body because he neutralized the reactions of his previous sinful activities by chanting out the names of Narayan, which was actually his son, but he remembered the real Narayan. And then he went, he heard this conversation, he went and performed Prabhasak Kshetra. He went to perform devotional service at this holy place. And then at the time, again, when it was time, at the destined time for him to give up his body, this time the Vishnudutas appeared on a flower airplane, and he remembered them, having seen them once before. And for him, at the time of death, it was just like lightning and illumination taking place simultaneously. There was no cause of fear whatsoever. As it's described, when Dhruva Maharaj gave up his body, the example is given like lightning and illumination simultaneously taking place. The death personified appeared before him, and Dhruva Maharaj, instead of having to meet death personified, simply stepped on the head of death personified, and used his head as a step. He entered into the flower airplane and went back to Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, to the transcendental realm. In the same way, Ajamil, he went back to the spiritual world, being freed from all of his contamination, having engaged in devotional service to the Lord. So this story of Ajamil is told as an example of how one can not only neutralize the reactions of previous sinful activities, but when one engages in devotional service to the Supreme Lord, he's immediately free from all such contaminations, such as the power of devotional service. Therefore, becoming aware of these sinful activities helps us at least to understand what they are, and it should encourage us or inspire within us or create within us the desire not just simply to neutralize the effects. People, of course, they don't want to suffer. When people see somebody else suffering, immediately they think, you know, boy, how can I avoid such suffering? You know, how can I avoid having to, you know, having to undergo such a terrible experience? You know, it's natural. When we see others suffering, then we think, you know, I don't want to suffer like this. But when we know the cause of suffering, then if a person who is conversant with the science of the soul, who knows that the soul is eternal, and knows that the results of one's previous activities performed in a previous life are manifest in this life as Parabdha karma, and then lying as seed as Aparabdha karma, waiting to fructify again in the future life, then an intelligent person will think, how can I avoid this suffering in the future, even though I may not be suffering right now? This is the nature. Of course, sometimes if we're not suffering, we're thinking, oh, I'm not suffering right now, therefore I must be happy. Happiness means to not be suffering. But actually, that is not real happiness as defined by the Bhagavatam. Real happiness is called Brahma Sokyam, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. The soul by nature is meant to experience a superior happiness, which is spiritual happiness, and is described as Brahma Sokyam, which is happiness derived from engaging in devotional service, which is eternal, which satisfies the self, and which gives one the impetus to eradicate not only the reactions of sinful life, but to engage in devotional service again and again and again, to be constantly engaged in devotional service to the Lord. And therefore, Krishna says in this verse of Bhagavad Gita, not only is it the purest knowledge, but it gives direct perception of self by religion, realization, and it is everlasting and joyfully performed. Therefore, he describes it as the king of all knowledge. Why? Because this is not simply some dry renunciation and austerities. Devotional service is a joyful process. Kevala Ananda Kanda. As Lord Chandas Thakur describes in his song, Parama Karuna Pahu Dvijana Nitai Gora Chandra, Sabha Avatara Sarasara Sabasiros Mani Kevala Ananda Kanda. He just worships the two lords, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who have given us a very joyful process. It is a process which is not simply some dry form of renunciation, not simply some restraint from sense gratification, which simply creates frustration. But devotional service is actually very satisfying to the self. And because it's satisfying to the self, therefore it is described in this verse as the perfection of religion. And it is everlasting and joyfully performed. So it gives one a superior form of pleasure. This is the glories of devotional service to the Lord as described in this verse of Bhagavad Gita within the chapter which is most confidential knowledge. I was going to read, I don't know, it's very long. And I copied it, and I was going to read all of these different forms of sins, but I'll just summarize it. There are 11 principal sins. Violence, cruelty, anger, wandering mind, lying, disobedience to a superior, lust, selfishness, impurity, rude conduct, and destructiveness. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes these in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, and he gives a very elaborate description of each of these things. But it's 4 pages, so I'm not going to read it. But it at least gives us a sense of how dangerous it is to have an uncontrolled mind, how dangerous it is to have aparabdha karma, that still the results of previous sinful activity still lying as seed waiting to fructify in due course of time, how dangerous it is to still have bija, sinful desires within the heart, which will fructify in the form of sinful activities, which will produce more prarabdha and aparabdha karma, how dangerous it is to be in the material world. Prabhupada would oftentimes quote the verse Parampada Yadvipatamda Tesha, where there's a material world, there is danger at every step. And actually, just a couple of hours ago, I received an email message. And in Ukraine, it was one devotee that I've known for like 20 years. She was very sick, but she didn't realize how sick she was, and she was taken to the hospital yesterday, and she left her body. Four children, no father, and param padam yavi padam natesha, as Prabhupada explains, in this material world, there's danger at every step. Just a few weeks ago, I'm sure many of you might have heard of it, when Radhanath Maharaj and I were in Kiev in Ukraine, Radhanath Maharaj, we were there together, and there were some devotees who were being recommended for initiation to accept their vows, to take Vaishnava initiation, to receive the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and to make their vows before their spiritual master. Radhanath Maharaj happened to be very sick on the day of initiation, and he couldn't initiate them. So, just as he was getting ready to leave the airport, the regional secretary asked him, Maharaj, there are these devotees, 13 devotees waiting to be initiated. What do you think should be done? So Maharaj said, well, let them go to the temple room. I'll initiate them right now. And they can take fire sacrifice, sit before the fire sacrifice a little bit later. So he went into the temple room. These 13 devotees, they received their spiritual name, received their beads, and then Maharaj had to rush because it was unexpected. He was going to give the initiation. He was going to the airport, and five of these devotees jumped into the car to try to get to the airport before them, and it was a terrible car accident on the way to the airport. Maharaj saw the car accident, but he had no idea it was the devotees that were in the car. One of the devotees who had just been initiated 1 hour before, she left her body. She died instantly. And four of the other girls who were in the car, they were all hospitalized with severe injuries. And param padam yavi patam natesha, as we say, nobody, danger at every step. Nobody can anticipate when something is going to happen. Of course, for these particular devotees, it was an auspicious day. They had received initiation on that day, and they were accepted as disciples of Radhanath Maharaj, but they had to, for some reason, some residual reaction was there, and they had to also suffer in the way that they did. There's so many examples. This is just an example that's fresh in my memory because it just happened very recently. I happened to be in Ukraine at the time. I did leave at the time, and for me, I had to be there during all the subsequent activities of all these girls being rushed to different hospitals and having to be taken to the trauma hospital, which main trauma hospital in Kiev. They had, three of them had their spleens removed, and had concussions, broken bones. It was a terrible accident. And we hear of these things, and we know that that's the nature of the material world, that every step there is potential danger. So we don't know what is lying ahead. In fact, Srila Prabhupada gives the example. In the Bhagavad Gita, he describes that fear comes with the uncertainty of the future. right? That is one of the causes of fear. We don't know what lies ahead in the future. And that's one of the root causes of fear. Therefore, how to become free from fear? Bhaja hure manashi nanda nandana abhaya charana ravindare. My dear minds, please meditate upon the divine son of Nanda, because by meditation upon him one becomes fearless. If one is always situated in remembrance of the Lord, one is engaged in devotional service by any one of the nine processes of hearing about the Lord, of chanting the glories of the Lord, by remembering the Lord, by serving the Lord, serving the Lord, speaking the Lord, worshipping the Lord, offering prayers to the Lord, surrendering everything to the Lord, befriending the Lord. These are the nine processes of devotional service, which are given by Balad Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam. These are all very powerful processes which can uproot and eradicate all the reactions to past sinful life and can situate one on the platform of devotional service, whereby one at the end of this life can remember the Supreme Lord Narayan and go back home, back to Godhead. So this is the nature of devotional service, and that is this, it is described as pavitram uttamam, the most purest of all knowledge. And all of this purest of all knowledge culminates in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. In the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the story of Ajamil, there is one verse, Itavan Eva Lok. Itavan Evan. I can't remember the Sanskrit. Devotional service beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the ultimate religious principle for the living entity in human society. So this verse describes devotional service beginning with chanting the holy names of the Lord. This is the most powerful method for Cheto Dharpana Majanam Bhava Mahadavagi Navarpana, as described in the Shikshastaka prayers. It cleanses the heart from all the dust accumulated from years together, and thus the fire of conditional life of repeated birth and death is extinguished. This Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction for humanity at large, because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon, is a life of transcendental knowledge, and increases the ocean of transcendental bliss, and enables us to taste that nectar for which each and every one of us are fully hankering for. So this is a little bit about the nature of this devotional service, which Krishna described in the previous verse as this verse and in the previous verse as knowledge, confidential knowledge, guhyottamam. And he told Arjuna in the previous verse, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion, it is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. Any questions? Yes?
Yeah, you said there were nine processes of devotional service.
Yes.
Could you repeat those for me?
Yes. Hearing about the Supreme Lord, chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord, remembering the Supreme Lord, worshipping the Supreme Lord, offering prayers to the Supreme Lord, serving the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, which means like intimate service, like Lakshmi, who is the eternal consort of the Lord, who always serves the lotus feet of the Lord.
Serving and feet.
Yes. And worshipping, serving, remember, befriending?
Befriend.
Yes, befriending the Lord, surrendering everything to the Lord. I missed one.
Atmanivedana.
Surrendering everything. That is Atmanivedana. Yes. These are the nine processes of devotional service. Any other questions?
Yes.
know what sin is.
Well, actually, I was going to...
What was the authority that tells you that lying is sin, and, you know, cheating and lusting is sin?
Yes.
We don't get sin with that.
Yeah, well, we accept the authority of the Vedic literatures.
Okay. That's what I have.
Yes, it's one of the Vedic literatures. There's the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is over here on this shelf. And it delineates it in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in one of the volumes, in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a description. But it's been summarized by one Vaishnava Acharya, or spiritual master. He summarized the essence, which is given in the Bhagavatam, in the form of these, the list that I read to you. And these are constituted as sinful activities. Okay, we can end here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.